Welcome to the Healthy Hustlers podcast, a series of healthy conversations with inspiring hustlers. I'm your host, Madeline Carafa. Today's guest is joining me from WA, a youth worker and former bachelor contestant. Brooke Blurton has the kindest soul and warmest nature. A proud Indigenous woman, Brooke's passion for her culture and heritage shines bright throughout our whole conversation. Gracing the TV screens across the nation in The Bachelor and The Bachelor in Paradise, Brooke soon became the girl that our nation adored. With a bright spark and an oozing passion to make positive change, during this healthy conversation, Brooke chats to me about her upbringing, the importance of educating ourselves on Indigenous culture and how we can do so, her personal healing journey, and her dedicated role as a youth worker. I absolutely adored this chat with Brooke, and I know you guys are going to love it. Before we get started with today's episode, I just wanted to let you know that due to the current restrictions that have been enforced due to COVID-19, this episode has been recorded online. Therefore, the sound quality may vary from other episodes. I appreciate your understanding during this time. This episode of The Healthy Hustlers is proudly brought to you by Donata Sugar-Free Ice Cream. Zero added sugar and zero compromises on deliciousness. Hello, beautiful Brooke, and welcome to The Healthy Hustlers podcast. I'm super, super excited to have you on here today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me, Maddie. I am a little bit crook. I'm good and well mentally, but physically I'm a little bit sick at the moment.
A bit under the weather. You've had a lot going on. You've just been on the most amazing trip. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I guess I think it's definitely the consequences of going full speed ahead in the last couple of weeks. I just went and did a north trip in collaboration with Tourism WA. So I basically did the WA coastline all the way up and ending in Exmouth, which was absolutely stunning. Obviously, I don't want to brag too much because I feel very cautious of people who are stuck in isolation at the moment. So I'll keep information a bit limited.
Well, it honestly inspired me because I was looking at all your photos and it just looked so incredible. And I actually said to my husband, with everything that's happening now, and obviously going overseas is probably a long way in the future, having that opportunity again. And after seeing all your beautiful photos, I said to my husband, why don't we try and do WA next year and do all of that coastline? So it's definitely inspired me to organize a beautiful trip for my family next year and have something to look forward to. So I'm glad that you were sharing it all.
Yeah, I know. And that was the whole point, I guess, of the campaign, is that really to encourage, obviously before all this sort of stuff happened, but I guess some restrictions being lifted and then being able to travel around. But I think WA, it's such a hidden gem. A lot of people really undermine how beautiful it is. But I guess I got to experience that firsthand, I guess, but also being a country girl as well. I really do appreciate getting out in country again.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that's probably one of the most beautiful things that will be to come from this experience or not being able to travel overseas, is that it will kind of encourage a lot of us to explore our own backyard and, to head over to places like WA. I think for us living in Victoria, sometimes it seems so far away, or you can get to Bali in a similar time, or there's always that thought pattern of so I think it's going to be really special to be able to spend some time in our own country and really explore all the beauty that it has to offer. You did just touch on growing up though in the country. I'd love you to share a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up with the audience.
So always been in WA. I did live in Sydney for maybe a year or so, but soon definitely went home, got a bit homesick. But yeah, I grew up in a place called Carnarvon, which is about 9-10 hours drive from Perth. It is a very small town, so very small population, very country. It's on the coast, so obviously you're not too far from the beach. But yeah, my childhood was a little bit, a little bit different to most. I grew up with an Aboriginal Malaysian mother and an English father, but mum and dad were separated and I had four other siblings on my mum's side. So Yeah, childhood, we moved around quite a bit. And my mum was just a single mum. Sorry, not just a single mum, an incredible single mum. And she, you know, had five kids to look after, plus my nan, and then plus any other family that would be there as well. So in Carnarvon, it's quite small. There's not a lot happening. I grew up with quite a lot of things happening in the household, surrounded by things that I guess young people shouldn't really be surrounded by. But I guess, you know, those experiences have sort of navigated my path in that way. So, you know, it's taught me that that's not the type of stuff that I would really be involved with growing up or would like to.
No, I love that. And I guess on, you know, anyone who does follow you or online or knows of you would really know how proud you are of your Aboriginal heritage. Was that something that you learnt during your childhood? Was it something that kind of your family was surrounded by and involved in, or was it something that you really educated yourself on?
I'm actually learning more about the history as time goes on. So I probably forgot to mention that when I was 11, unfortunately, I lost my mum and my nan only a month apart. My mum unfortunately took her own life and my nan had just died from sickness and health issues. So obviously being so close together and losing probably the most two influential and, yeah, losing the two influential women in your life is a really hard thing, I guess, to go through so young, but also then having to, like, navigate the world. So I really connected with my culture. My mum and my nan taught me to be really proud of it. And I guess growing up, there were some things that really confused me or really had me questioning a few things. We'll go probably more into that down the line about what's happening in the world. But I guess my Aboriginality was something that really centered me and grounded me. And I think as I go on and, you know, get older and how I've, you know, developed a career over time, I've learned that that is my center and that is my grounding, and always revert back to culture and country and land. So I'm always learning. And I guess, you know, losing mum and nan so young, we lost a big part of learning and I guess passing those traditions on. And I think now I just hold on to those really good memories and then constantly always teaching and learning new things, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. How at 11, like it's such a young age to lose to such influential people, women in your life, like they're, you know, your absolute rocks. How did you deal with that, having younger siblings?
If you had my family on here, like my brothers, they would definitely vouch for this. I guess as a young girl, I was a little bit bossy in a sense that I really copied my mum in a way. My mum was very strong woman. She was very strict with some things that, you know, she did and said. So I guess I really adapted those from her. And then I kind of took this role on as being like a carer in my family.
Yeah.
Before my nana was sick, I looked after her. So before my nana got sick, I was basically a full-time carer for her, and sometimes I missed out on school because I would have to stay home and either look after my nana or also look after my younger siblings. So yeah, I missed out on a bit of school because of that reason, but I think I just naturally adapted that caring role because I had a sense of responsibility. And at the time, you know, it's not, I guess, in most standard families, I was going to say normal, but I don't really know what normal is, but you know, standard families, you know, it's the parents that have that responsibility of taking care of the family or the mum and dad. And because circumstances and the environment that I was living in, I naturally had to adapt that. And, you know, I took it in as my role in my family, and my family still now heavily rely on me till this day. And I'm fine with that. I love that. because I guess that's just now inbuilt in me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And I, you know, it translates in my job. It translates in my relationships. Yeah, it's kind of just one of those things that I guess when you're young and you're going through all these experiences and sometimes, they, you know, they're quite traumatic or they're a bit, you know, overwhelming, I think you learn to survive. It's kind of like a survival mode thing. Mm. And I think at a younger age, unfortunately, my mum suffered from quite a strong drug addiction and it was, you know, on and off drugs throughout my life. I think you do learn to just navigate life on your own and independent as you can. And you are in a bit of survival mode looking after your siblings as well.
Yeah. You said that you don't really know what normal is. I guess at 11, did you know that? Like, did you know that it wasn't normal, the environment that you were living in, or was it just so natural to you to be in that you kind of didn't know anything different?
I guess now being older and then looking outside in, some things, you know, I think, wow, I can't believe like I actually went through that and I just navigated it, you know, like I just kind of wrote it off. And, you know, I guess, you know, no family is normal or perfect at all. And I definitely, you know, I don't know what an ideal of a perfect family is, but I love my family and the dynamic that we grew up around or grew up in, because at the end of the day, we always reverted back to family. Whatever was happening in our life, it always reverts back to the connection of family, and that was really strong. I think having my dad in and out of my life as well, my dad was being English and not really understanding culture and what that means to me, there was, I guess, that separation of it, that relationship. And, you know, I was always drawn back to my mom, no matter how glamorous or stable my father and his life and his family were, I always reverted back to culture. And it's really unusual to think, because you're like, well, I could have, you know, I guess I could have seen it as a sort of free pass and not have to go through all these things in life, you know, and chose to live with my dad. But I didn't want that. Like I chose to be with my mom and be with my family. And then later on, obviously, by default, I actually then had to go live with my dad. So, but I had been taught so much resilience, I think.
Yeah, you obviously absolutely would have learned so much during that time. And I think it's so nice what you touched on about like just wanting to be with your mum. I think, I don't know, this might be quite spiritual or deep for some people, but I think since having my daughter, I'm such a true believer that we as souls, like we choose who we need in our life. And I think we choose the mothers that we need to kind of give us the experiences and the lessons and the pathways for what we are meant to be in this lifetime. So, you know, when you're saying that, I was like, you know, you're obviously so connected and so drawn to your mother and needed to go through that to be the woman that you are destined to be today and to be having all of the positive impacts that you are on, you know, younger children today. So I really like that you, touched on that and said that you always felt quite drawn to her. Mm-hmm. I guess from your cultural background, there's obviously been some pretty big movements, incredible movements here in Australia the last few months after seeing all the Black Lives Matter take place in the US. We've had a really beautiful movement here in Australia where we've been called to, I guess, learn more about our First Nations people and to implement some really serious change. How have you personally found this period of time? Because I know, you know, a lot of different people I've connected with online have felt that, you know, it's been a pretty intense time for them and it's been at times quite draining or overwhelming. So I'd love to kind of hear how you're processing all this time and how your energy is feeling.
Firstly, you always need to acknowledge, you know, what happened in America and the US, and I guess always acknowledge, you know, the family of what's happened to poor George Floyd and the tragedy around that. And I think you always feel for the family surrounding the people that, you know, who have passed and in not really nice circumstance. Personally, in this year, And I've really been trying to, I guess, adapt a lot more, I guess, self-care. And I think, you know, I understand that working in that space, self-care is really important in these times. And I've been on a huge healing journey myself. And then to be on social media and to see all this tragedy and the movement happening, it really, really challenged my thought processing. What I'm trying to say is that I was on this healing journey, and then to see this sort of stuff, it just taught me how much more healing we need to do here in Australia. And I guess specifically for First Nations people, I found the whole experience quite overwhelming, I must admit, seeing it and seeing the videos and then seeing people's commentary and the news about it. It's really, I guess, opened up people's eyes to what still happens in the US, but also obviously is happening here in Australia. So, and to us specifically, to our First Nations people who obviously have been here for so many years and are still confronted by huge systemic racism. And I guess I've also, my family have experienced it. I've actually personally experienced racism in school and in the education system, and obviously still in my career. So yeah, it's when it personally affects you and you see it, it definitely, yeah, it can be sometimes overwhelming.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, it's been so eye-opening, I guess. Like, I'll be the first to admit that I absolutely did not know the extent of it here in Australia. I don't think a lot of people did. I don't think majority of people did, to be honest. And I just couldn't even imagine what you would have been feeling or how overwhelmed you would have been, especially during that intense time where it was all over social media and the news and stuff like that. Because yeah, like, it's really heartbreaking to think that we have ever let it get to that, or that we, and that we just don't know enough about what's happened here on our own home soil.
Yeah.
What are some of the changes, I guess, that you personally would love to see happen?
Definitely more learning. You know, this whole thing that's happened with the Black Lives Matter movement, this is only the beginning, I guess, and this is time for now for all Australians to now positively engage with Indigenous issues here in Australia. Like, I think it's a, like you said, an eye-opener, and it's got people, you know, accepting that they haven't got that knowledge or they haven't got that education. And I think that's a really good thing. I think it's, you know, people are now acknowledging, wow, I live in this country and I still don't know anything about First Nations people of this country. And, you know, the history is real. A lot of people, I guess, are a little, and I would use this word lightly, but ignorant, because I think sometimes people aren't ignorant, they just don't know. And that's fine. And I still personally am learning about culture and Aboriginal education. I'm not a guru, or I'm not an elder who knows absolutely everything. And I don't expect non-Indigenous people to just completely understand everything. Whereas if, you know, I'm supposed to, I don't. So we're all on this journey, and I'm really happy that people are now standing up and I guess not being silent. I think silence is where the real issue is, because it's allowing racism to continue to happen. And I think a lot of people now are recognizing it and acknowledging it when it does happen, or if it does happen to someone else or themselves personally. Yeah, I think silence is the biggest killer. And I want to see more learning. It starts with education. I'd like people to start doing more research, asking questions, again, actively engaging yourself with Indigenous issues, communities, teachings, and people to, you know, seek out and actually want to know this stuff, or complete, you know, cultural competency courses, volunteer, donate, whatever. There is so much that you can do. It is literally like opening Pandora's box, but it's, I think this is now a first step. Yeah, and I've seen, you know, through social media, through media, huge change. And, you know, I'm loving it. Obviously, I'm still on this healing journey of taking care of myself and what I need to do. So I'm never really in full capacity, but I can't wait to see so much more what people can do. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that so much. I think that's, yeah, really beautiful advice. And anyone listening, I think we can make time to be educating ourselves on what has taken place, you know, what our history is here.
I think a lot of people are just... they just don't know where to go. And I understand that. It's like, where do you start, right? And we've got such powerful advocates here, which you can navigate through social media and Instagram, through socials now. Like, we've also stepped up. I think, you know, as Aboriginal people ourselves, you know, we've always had to sort of in some way prove ourselves. And I think, you know, some of us have really stepped up to the plate and been like, hey, look, I'm here. I'm your resource. Come listen to me. Come sit with me. And I think that's where the real growth happens as well, because we now, you know, have these platforms and resources so accessible. And obviously, you know, keeping in mind that these people aren't always going to be accessible, but you know, they're really open to the learning and growth that people want to do in that area. So, you know, I always say to people that want to learn, my DMs are always open. If I don't have capacity, I can always, you know, forward on to someone else who would be willing to do it. But also, you know, it's about the initiative of taking your own responsibility and doing it yourself.
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, and keeping people accountable, not only other people but yourself, being like, I don't know this. How do I find out?
We'll be right back after this healthy break. Once upon a time, I quit eating ice cream because of the unnecessary sugar I was consuming. Then I got introduced to Donata Co. and my life changed forever. Donata Co. is a sugar-free ice cream range that is made right here in Australia by three Perth girls, containing no added sugars, all natural ingredients, nothing artificial, and approximately half the calories of a serving of traditional ice cream. It is no wonder why I'm completely hooked. Praised for having minimal and cleaner ingredients, Donata Co. are changing the way we consume dessert, with no compromises on taste or texture. Donata Co. ice cream is so creamy and delicious. It's hard to believe it's sugar-free. Donata sugar-free ice cream is available in 1,300 stores around Australia, including Coles and IGA. Head to donataco.com to find your local stockist or simply click the link in the show notes.
There's so many beautiful resources now and so many people that are so passionate online sharing. I know I've learned so much so quickly just from watching different Instagram lives and IGTVs about people who are really passionate about it and are sharing the history. And, you know, it's amazing that they now have that platform and that voice to be able to. So I think, yeah, we can all be taking the time to educate ourselves a little bit more and even just making the change at home. Like, I know for me personally, as a young mum, like straight away I was like, okay, well, how am I in our home fostering that environment that we always show love and compassion to every single person, no matter where they're from in the world? And, you know, to do that, I kind of looked through the different books that I read, Georgia, and made sure there was a lot of diversity in the books and the people in the books and, you know, what stories. Like, she's only 10 months, but like I'm of the belief that she's still absorbing that sort of stuff. There's, you know, there's some really beautiful books out now, like that have people from all different cultures in the drawings, and, you know, about kindness and about how we create change. And they're such simple little steps, but I think if we create the change in our homes and in our hearts. I know there was a beautiful, I don't know if you saw that quote or it was an illustration by Oh Happy Danny, and it was like, change it in your home, change it in your heart, and then change it in the world. And it was such a beautiful thing, I think, to see and think that's exactly how I personally can start to help be part of the change along with education. So, yeah, I loved that you shared all of that. I would love to touch on your work though, because, you know, it obviously just oozes through this whole chat already just how kind and compassionate you are. And you are a youth worker in Perth. I'd love to talk a little bit about your job and, you know, you've touched on self-care and, you know, how you're healing at the moment. Like, how do you find that balance between a job that I'm sure is incredibly emotional at times or requires a lot of your love and attention with also filling up your own cup and making sure that you're giving yourself time to heal?
This is definitely something I'm still navigating, and I think people go through their life in their careers always learning, always pushing yourself. I love my job and I love working with young people. I can't believe that, you know, I've been working in this area for now 5 years, that I can say that I have a passion for, like, you know, I've found a purpose and I found my passion in something. Because I think, yeah, I found it so young, and every day, you know, I'm constantly challenged, I'm constantly thrown off by something, and, you know, it's always, you're asking yourself different questions every day. But I still, at the end of the day, I still love what I do. And I think youth work specifically obviously entails working with young people. And I don't know why, but I choose to work with, and, you know, they would be described as at risk and tough kids naturally. And that's, you know, what we categorize these kids into in society. But for me, you know, every kid has a story, and every kid, or young person, sorry, is on a journey just like we are. And they just need their path, you know, they just need help with the navigation of their path and to sort of be put on this, on their way. And they don't have the skills or sometimes the coping mechanisms to be able to deal with everything that life hits with them with. But, it, you know, you've gone through it personally. I've obviously gone through my experiences, so I've learned from them, and it's also then passing that information down to them. And they don't always listen. You know, people, they don't want to listen.
No, they know better. Yeah, as you did at 16.
Exactly. Well, you know, and the thing is that, you know, when I was 11, I thought I knew better. I thought I had figured it out, you know.
Totally.
And I see the same behavior, and I see the same, I just see myself sometimes in these young people, and especially, yeah, you know, the ones that do go through some really traumatic experiences, or even, you know, are just passed around the system, just like their, what do you call that game, pass the parcel, you know. Yeah. So, and I think I realized what I didn't have in my life growing up, and it's something that I've strived for in my adult life. So, you know, consistency, stability, passion. And I teach the kids that, you know, you might not have consistency in some areas, but you can provide that for yourself in other ways. And these kids, you know, they don't have stable homes, they don't come from areas that the most, you know, I guess, low socioeconomic. So they don't have access to some things that some kids would. But they just, honestly, they take it on, and it's so hard to watch sometimes. But at the end of the day, I just remind myself that they're still on a path, and you're just helping them take little baby steps to navigating them on their journey. And it is hard sometimes to come home and not take it home. And as a youth worker and a, you know, a social worker or in community services, you are equipped with the skills to be able to, you know, put up these boundaries. These boundaries are more for your safety personally.
Yes.
Sometimes they're not always about professional boundaries. They're actually just for your safety, about, you know, not holding on to things and not dealing with things, and it then building up, and like you said, pouring out your cup too much, and you have nothing else to give. Yeah. So, like I said, I love my job and I love working with young people. I work with all types of young people, Indigenous, non-Indigenous, some refugee young people. So every day is just, I'm surprised by the level of resilience and strength that, you know, young people do have. but also the societal pressures that happen as well, I guess.
Yeah.
Even just, you know, through social media and TikTok and all these platforms that, you know, sometimes do more harm than good. And you're here trying to navigate that space in your own self and your personal journey, but also then, you know, help young people navigate theirs. But yeah, I'm a serious empath.
I could tell. I could definitely tell that you're an empath. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm pretty sure anyone listening would be like, "Wow, yes, she's definitely an empath." Because I just, you know, I guess because I've navigated life and I have learned to put myself in other people's shoes. And that's really what empathy is, right? So I guess empathy and the difference between empathy and sympathy is that empathy is putting yourself in a person's shoes and imagining what they would be thinking, doing, feeling. And then sympathy is being like, wow, yeah, that really sucks, and giving the person, you know, sympathy and saying, well, I don't know how you're physically feeling, but I can understand that that must be crap. You know, do you know what I mean? Like, yes, I don't know if that definitely was the best description, but
no, absolutely. No, I think it was great. And I think any, like an empath, I would say, because you put yourself, sorry, to add to that, I would say that as an empath, because you do exactly what you said, you put yourself in those people's position and you kind of try to understand what they're feeling, it can be a lot easier, or you seem to carry that emotion for a lot longer, I personally think.
Yeah, 100%. Would you,
yeah. Is that something that you've had to learn, I guess, over time to, or have any tactics around not carrying that for too long?
Yeah, for sure. And you're always learning, I guess, to do it quicker or slower in any different scenarios. Personally, this whole year, I've completely wrote it off as like a healing year. And, you know, I've actually gone back and I'm studying at the moment, hopefully, to better myself and to do something for me. I think my whole life, I've taken care of other people and I've put myself in other people's shoes and I've taken on their stuff to try and figure out what they can do to better their life and to, you know, have better outcomes in their life. But then I've kind of neglected the things that I've really wanted to do. And I think this year really has been a year of huge change for me in personal growth, and then potentially, you know, in career growth, because I'm taking the filling the cup process a lot slower. Mm-hmm. You know, normally I would have to, you know, I'd come home from work and I would either meditate or read a book or have a hot bath or something, you know, very simple self-care strategies that you can do that give you that simple fix that make you feel better in that time. But, you know, in the long run, there are some things that you do really need to take the time to actually allow yourself to heal. And yeah, I have been really enjoying this process, I must admit.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, I've tried different avenues. I've tried acupuncture and Chinese medicine, hypnotherapy, seeing psychics. Like, it has been a very insightful place to sort of navigate. You know, I've surprised myself in so many ways of what makes me feel good, what I don't like, what things trigger me. Like, I didn't know some things triggered me. Yeah.
I love that you just have such a beautiful awareness of that now as well. I think that's a huge part of anyone's journey, and especially a healing journey, is creating that awareness for exactly what you just said, things that trigger you, like being aware of what triggers you or what helps to make you feel like the best version of yourself, or to understand yourself deeper. Like, there's so much that goes into this work. I love that you're diving into that. What's been some of your things that have fulfilled you the most or made you feel the best version of yourself?
I spoke briefly, I guess, earlier in the podcast about culture and, I guess, connecting to land and back on country. And I think the connection with land, with Aboriginal people, is so strong and so undermined. And we can learn so much by the knowledge that we can learn from elders about how they take care of the land and the land takes care of us. Like, it's a reciprocal relationship. And that was something that I learned this year, and to the, really to the depth and core of like how it really does help, I guess, in like a science perspective as well.
Yeah, awesome.
But that has really helped me feel fulfilled in terms of, you know, when I, you know, we're, or every day we're hustling, right? But, and I love that, you know, this podcast is called The Healthy Hustlers, because sometimes we are hustling, but are we really taking care of ourselves in the process, you know? And sometimes we do need to look from the outside in, and sometimes we stop doing things that we love, and that really does mean a lot to us. And I think for me, you know, every day I'm going to work, I'm exercising, playing footy, doing something, I forget that, you know, I'm not even touching the ground sometimes in a physical sense. Like, I'm not putting my feet in the sand or in the ground and feeling it. I'm just every day it's stick shoes and socks on, go to the gym, go to work and come inside. And it's the same thing. And I know that's so simple. And this is the thing, it's so simple, but it has really helped me start feeling that connection that I've lost so much. And I really, really suggest people who would be listening to this, and I know if you're not spiritual or if you're not really on that level, then this might sound a little bit weird, but, you know, if you ever get the chance to be close to some sort of park or nature or beach, I really highly suggest just taking your shoes off and just like literally wriggling your toes in the dirt and the sand, because honestly, I felt that it always just makes me feel connected instantly. It's an instant connection that you have, and it always makes me feel very fulfilled and very wholesome and grounded.
Amen to that. I'm like just sitting here just like nodding along the whole time. It is such, like you said, it's so simple, but it is so, so powerful. Personally, I grew up like 200 meters from the beach, and something I really took for granted for so many years, I think. And, you know, in this hustle culture, working 9 to 5 in all weekends in corporate for so many years and that really busy city life, I just was so disconnected to what made me feel so connected and to what grounded me again. And that's where the name The Healthy Hustlers came from, was because, you know, exactly, we can be busy and we can hustle and we can do all those things, but if we're not filling up our own cup and grounding ourselves and prioritizing our health and our well-being, then none of it really matters, because the hustle, we don't even get to enjoy the success of it, because, you know, we're caught up in the chaos instead of just taking a step back and nurturing our body and our minds. So I love going to, as soon as I get home and go to the beach, I literally just choose off in the ocean, no matter how cold it is, and just have that water over your feet and your feet in the sand. And it does, it completely just grounds you and centers you and just connects you so much, I think, to yourself and to, I don't know, it just allows all those little worries to go away as well.
Yeah. And I feel like even just in this whole COVID process, actually I banned actually the word COVID in my work. So we're not allowed to call it COVID. The kids come up with a random name sometimes just to like name it just for fun. But yeah, I guess in this whole COVID process, you know, we are learning, because we are isolating and having to isolate, I think we are appreciating that part a lot more. And I think that's a huge, huge thing for every person in this world to learn how to do. And, you know, we really do take things for granted. And, you know, just the thought of just going to the beach sometimes, like you think, oh, it's such an effort. You got to get in the car, you got to drive to the beach, you're going to get sand everywhere. But it's like, I think it's, you know, now we're just like, it doesn't take 2 seconds to think about it. And I know I really do feel for people that are in isolation and not having that opportunity, but I think you know, everything will soon, hopefully be back soon. And like, I guess, definitely. You know, that'll be probably the first thing that most people do is go.
It'll definitely be the first thing I do. Yeah. And I think even if, you know, like I'm in Melbourne in the city and you can find a park where you can put your feet in grass and, yeah. you know, still find a way to feel connected that way. Like sometimes I even find, like, it sounds so silly, but just wearing no shoes in my house, like I know it's not the same as actually touching nature, but like, you know, we're so used to, especially in Melbourne in cold weather, like slippers and socks and all these clothes, like actually just having no shoes on for a little bit, like is actually just really nice. So I think finding all of those little things. But I did listen to another podcast that you were on, and you said said on it that all you ever wanted was to be happy. And I'd love to know, you know, what happiness means to you.
I think in that time there was so much happening in my life. I think it was pretty chaotic, and I was really kind of finding what makes me happy and what I didn't want to do, and trying to navigate that space. But happiness for me means so many different things. Like I personally in my life now, I would say that I'm extremely happy, and I've never been a very miserable person. I've always, you know, looked on the brighter side. So, you know, I've always been quite happy. But I think happiness for me is being healthy, the first thing, if you're being physically healthy. And I think that also means, you know, being mentally healthy, and then, you know, having your spiritual health and emotional health to support that. I think those are the my huge, they're like my core. My happiness, you know, when I guess now at the moment I'm currently a little bit sick, you know, and it has really played on my mental health in a way that I haven't been able to be at the gym and be full capacity because I'm not feeling the best. And I think you have to have that acceptance that, you know, it's just a temporary thing. And, you know, it does make you unhappy. But overall, I think happiness for me is just really being healthy physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually. Being connected to my family and culture, obviously, as huge ones as well. But, you know, now being single, not to drop that in there, but I think, you know, I was chasing a different type of happiness. I think I was chasing a happiness that someone really had to fulfill for me. And I can honestly say that this year and now that, you know, I'm still on this healing journey, that I am really happy with being by myself, alone, single, with my dog. Like I could live alone. I've always lived with people, but I could happily live alone. And I don't know, that doesn't sound very attractive in that way, like, you know, living by yourself, sad or something. But I mean, like, really be happy with yourself and the space and the energy that you give out and you get back. So, you know, I was seeking that different happiness, but now I'm just really quite content and happy with where I'm going. And then potentially, you know, you manifest the things that you want in your life when you're happy.
Yeah, it's so true. You emulate such a different energy when you're in. I think the word contentment says so much to me. Like I feel like contentment is absolutely when you're in alignment and in happiness, because you're not seeking it from anyone else. Like you were saying, you're not seeking it from a relationship. You're not having an expectation on anyone else to bring that about except for yourself. And I think that I personally believe that you're exactly, you know, on the right path of happiness, because that's when, if you can fulfill it in yourself, like that's where it truly lies. It can't be fulfilled from another person or a relationship or a materialistic item. It's definitely something that has to be found and filled up in yourself first. So I'm so glad that you're feeling that. And I think it's really beautiful that's happening at the moment.
Thank you. Yeah, it's like I said, it's such a crazy journey, you know. So I guess the last 2 years of my life have been, I guess, before the show, going on Batchy was pretty chaotic, and then post-Batchy was even more chaotic. And then I decided to do Paradise and film that, met my boyfriend or ex-boyfriend, and then was, you know, waiting for it to air in a relationship, and then being in a relationship for, you know, 16 months, it was a very intense, it's been a very intense couple of years. And I think I really neglected myself in that way of what really does make me happy. And you're right, what does even happiness mean? Because I think for anyone, it is such an individual thing. And, you know, what makes people happy in different ways might not necessarily mean what makes you happy, but as long as you are so content and I really admire that women specifically, I guess, I really admire women who can be so independent and not heavily reliant on societal pressures of being in a relationship with someone. And I'm not going into a relationship more so, but that's just an example. But, you know.
No, definitely. I think it's so true.
Yeah. You know, there's just so many pressures of you have to be in a relationship to be happy. It's like, well, no, you know, and then even when you are single and you're happy, people question your happiness. And it's like, no, yes. I'm really, actually really happy by myself with my dog.
I love that. And I think, you know, exactly what you said, like there's so many different things or facets that come into play with happiness, and everyone's looks different. And that's why I loved that you touched on your health as well as like spirituality, because that's obviously something that contributes to your overall happiness. And I'm exactly the same there. Like that's definitely something that I have to be investing in to feel really happy and fulfilled is my spirituality. And I'm loving diving into that a little bit more. Do you have a spiritual practice that you use, or what are some of your kind of go-tos?
I guess I try different avenues. I guess you've probably gathered that I do really like variety. Sometimes I do definitely go on tangents. So I do apologize, people, that I've gone on any, you know, long tangent. But spirituality for me is just really just like opening a door to endless opportunities. Like spirituality means so many, like again, like happiness, it just means such a different thing to different people. And I guess some of the things that I've really, you know, navigated, like, you know, you could do, I love burning incense, I love smells, I love oils, all that stuff really makes me happy and makes me feel connected, you know, and that's part of, I guess, you know, your spiritual journey. But I think, you know, if I can offer anything to people who would be listening, is really to nut out what your social emotional well-being looks like. And I use, I guess, picture it as a wheel. No, maybe a pizza, because I love food.
Oh, yeah. So, I would. I love pizza too.
Yeah. And, you know, just imagine all these pieces of this pizza are little things that make up you. So whether they're things that you love, or things that make you happy, or things that, you know, the things that you value. So, you know, part of my social emotional well-being is obviously, connecting with family, land, culture, you know, being physically well. So like doing the things that I love. I love footy. Like footy would be in my social emotional well-being because it's a part of me. It's like ingrained in me. And everyone's social emotional well-being would be so different. And I think I really highly suggest if you are listening to this and you haven't really nutted out what that means to you, I feel like just draw a big circle, you know, write a huge list of all the things that mean to you and make you happy, and then just put it in a wheel. And then that's what makes you, you. And then when things are sort of, you know, getting low, it's about filling it up again. So like separating it and being like, oh, well, this pizza, you know, this slice used to be, I would say it's very small. I haven't really taken too much attention to it. Let's, you know, fill it up, whether that's connecting to your spirituality or whether it's connecting to your health again.
I love that so much. I think that's such a beautiful takeaway. And I've honestly just adored chatting to you, Brooke. You are such a beautiful, beautiful soul. Thank you so much for your time today. I know the audience is honestly going to get so much from that. It was such a lovely chat. So I really appreciate your time. If anyone would like to continue to follow your journey, where can they find you?
My Instagram is obviously the most I'm active on, which is just brooke.blurton.
Love it. Oh, thank you so much for your time, and I will speak to you soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Maddie. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button and leave a 5-star review. For any products mentioned in today's show, please check the show notes below and hit the direct links. If you'd like to suggest a future guest, please follow @thehealthyhustlers on Instagram and send through a direct message. Until next week, don't forget to invest in you.